record onto this computer. Recording. Hi, my name's Todd Adams. I'm with Zen Parenting Radio. This is Zen Talk number 63. Are we coming in okay audio-wise? Give me a thumbs up for everybody. Sweet. Are we not connecting? How you doing?
These chairs.
This is Zen Talk number 63. Before we get into the first question... Oh, 5 o'clock, Millie said, in California.
That's right.
8 o'clock.
Not everybody lives in Chicago. This is a very good point.
That's right. Well done. So real quick, I did notice that somebody asked on the Facebook page about a podcast for four-year-olds. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to read them off just in case you missed it on Facebook. Sparkle Stories. Wow in the World. Good Night Stories for Rebel Girls. Did you know that that was a podcast?
They started a podcast about a year ago.
I had no idea. By kids, for kids, story time, and circle round.
So this isn't about kids podcast, but there was an article today that came out, I think in Variety, and it was about how Conan O'Brien has made podcasting a real thing. And there's a lot of podcasters who are really pissed off because they're like, think about how Mark Maron feels about that.
Well, and what does that mean?
Well, like, that's the thing, is that someone in Variety has decided that now podcasting is a thing because Conan O'Brien has a million followers or something. And it's like, we've been podcasting for 9 years. Like, I'm not talking that we should be acknowledged. That's not what I'm saying. We're not Conan O'Brien. What I mean is, like, just
sweetie,
think about the...
Sweetie, Conan O'Brien isn't us.
Well, just think about all the podcasters who have been doing this for almost a decade.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? And they're like, Conan O'Brien made this a thing. So,
right.
Anyway.
And then where's my book? So we have a friend, for those of you guys who have been to the conference before, we have a friend named John Duffy, and we spent 2 hours with him in this studio yesterday interviewing him about this book that he just came up with called Parenting the New Teen in the Age of Anxiety, a complete guide to your child's stressed, depressed, expanded, and amazing adolescence. Because we're good friends with him, we asked if he would join us for a Zen Talk, and he said yes. So we think it's going to be the next Zen Talk. So for anybody who either has a teenager who will have a teenager someday.
Yeah, you don't have to just have a teenager. This is all relevant. He's saying that the ages he's talking about is 8 to 24.
Mm-hmm.
Because children, you know, what we used to call teenagers, like that, oh, once you're 13 or 14, you're exposed to things. 8-year-olds are exposed to things.
Yeah.
So he wanted to call it the new teenager, 8 to 24.
Yes, but his publisher said no.
Yeah.
So anyways, we're excited about having Dr. Duffy on with us, and it'll probably be the next Zen Talk, but I'll let you guys know for sure at that time. We do have one question that we're going to read from a listener, but if anybody else has any other questions, please type them in, say, I have a question, or raise your hand or something like that. If not, you're going to hear a lecture presented by me about the Enneagram.
It's not really a lecture. We're going to have a discussion.
A presentation.
Lecture sounds like boring.
No, I know. I was just kidding. I don't like to use the word lecture. So anyways, but I first want to say hi to everybody. Hi to Peggy. Hi to Millie. Hi to Jacqueline and Matt. Hi to Rose, Aaron, Nikki, Donelda, Kate, and Anita. So I'm going to read this question, and I'm going to give you first take at it.
Sure.
And then I'm going to chime in. This is from a team member. I've been struggling all summer with my two daughters, really struggling. I can't seem to find a balance between feeling relaxed and feeling productive. There is so much negative energy in our home, and the dynamic drains and exhausts me. My girls are critical of each other, and we can't seem to find anything fun to do together without ending up in a fight. I bounce between feeling hopeless that it won't change or improve, to feeling determined to deal with our patterns by suggesting ways that we can communicate better, asking for input and discussions, but only to be met with total resistance and my girls saying I'm way too controlling. I mostly feel like I don't want to interact with them and find ways to leave the house. Crying is almost a daily thing. I'm just really stuck. I have so much helpful info, and so many times I can sense my own responsibility in these situations, but my discouragement overwhelmed me. Not sure where to turn, probably counseling. I appreciate Team Zen, but finding it tough to find happy moments. Sorry for the long post. So, before I turn it over to you, I just want to like send love and strength and vulnerability.
You're going to send vulnerability
and authenticity to this person who's struggling, because we've all been there. And I just, you know, as one of the leaders of Team Zen, I just want to say we're here supporting you.
Sure, absolutely.
What do you think?
So I would say that the good news is I think that you get to just focus on you, that you don't have to worry about saying, okay, how am I going to fix my family? How am I going to fix this dynamic? How am I going to make everybody else be better? The good news is you just get to focus on you. And why I'm saying that is because a lot of times when the dynamics are not good in the home, we do everything we can to make everybody else different. And we try and create things and put things together that everybody else will buy into so we can feel better. And it unfortunately rarely works. The only thing we can do is lead by example. And I'm going to try not to be too cliche because then it's going to sound like, yeah, I know. But I want to be really clear that nothing... Okay, one of my favorite quotes by Marianne Williamson, now running for president, but you know, there was a time in my 20s and 30s where she was just one of my teachers, that she took from A Course in Miracles, which is that, you know, what a miracle is by definition is just a change in perception about something. That's all it is. You know, even if you're Rob Bell always talks about the way we can look at even miracles in the Bible, that really it's just a change in perception about how we see or experience something. And I say this not as a teacher, but as somebody who experiences this all the time. Everything that I get frustrated about or sad about or scared about when it comes to my kids or Todd or anything that's going on, the fear is real and my concern is real, but what I always eventually come to and what I've come to again and again is it's really the way that I'm experiencing it. And it's a lot of, it should be different. I messed up. I did something wrong. This is my fault. It shouldn't be this way. Other people are happier. Other people are doing it right. I'm doing it wrong. And all of that is just brain chatter. All of that is, even if some of it is true, maybe we did do something wrong. Maybe, like, I'm not saying that all of that is 100% false. What I'm saying is the shift that can occur in your family, you can't make them shift. You can only shift you. And when you present into a situation differently, because you're just doing your thing and you're finding humor in things and you're dancing in the kitchen and you are enjoying time reading a book and you are calmer, they don't shift because you told them to. The dynamic shifts because you're not doing the things you've always done. Your energy is different. You're more forgiving of yourself. You're more compassionate. And at the end of the question that you asked, you said maybe counseling. Absolutely counseling or coaching. We can't do this by ourselves. Like I have a therapist that is so helpful to me, and I sometimes see her once every 6 weeks and sometimes every other week. I've done EMDR with her. I've done body work. I've done spiritual work. I have come to realize through experience, not just through reading books and telling you guys this, the world is how we perceive it. The way our relationships are how we perceive they should be. And if they are not meeting what we think they should be, then we die a little inside because we have this vision of how we think it's supposed to be. And when we let go and say, maybe I can just appreciate this as it is, a lot of the tension falls away. Now, I'm very aware that especially a lot of you on Team Zen who have a child or a husband or somebody who, or spouse, doesn't just have to be a husband, or partner, who is challenging, or maybe there is some, difference in the way that they relate to people, or maybe there's anger, and that it can feel like you're walking on eggshells around these people and that all these things I'm saying, it's like, that's not going to change things. But if that is the case, it gives you even more reason to make sure you're taking care of yourself and make sure that you have times that you can feel some joy. It's okay to cry. I cry all the time. I cried. Well, I actually haven't cried today.
Yeah.
I cried the other day.
It's been a good day.
Like there's not a problem with being sad, but I just think that I think this is the self-awareness thing. This is, you can't change the dynamics in your home.
Yeah.
Without doing.
So echoing what Kathy said, because it's funny, I found myself when I first read this, I'm like, okay, what can I help? How can I help this teammate? And some of it was like gratitude, which is good. But even like when you're like, oh, you got to practice gratitude, then you feel crappy because
you're not grateful
and you're writing in your gratitude journal things you're grateful for, even though you're just writing it down and you feel like you are struggling and you have nothing to be grateful for. But there's always something to be grateful for. And then at the same time, like what Kathy said with the counselor coach, like I'm totally on board with that. And I would say, absolutely do it. And I've talked to some people and they're like, oh, I tried that. I tried one person one day. And no, it might take you a while to find somebody that you can lean on. So I would absolutely stand with Kathy in saying that a counselor coach is, there's the only cost is literally money
mm-hmm.
and time. Mm-hmm. And it's, but in the grand scheme of things, it's really not much of an investment. And what you can get back is pretty good. And then the only things you have control, kind of like, you know, you have two girls and sometimes they go crazy on each other or go nuts on you. And I would say you don't have any control over that. You have a little bit of influence, but try to start doing things that you have some control over. Maybe you have control over how much you sleep at night, or maybe you have control over how healthy you're eating, or maybe you have control over that you take a walk every day. I would, you know, once again, we're broken records, but it's a lot about self-care and, because you have control over your own self-care. You don't have control of whether or not your daughters are going to come home in a moody place. The only thing you have control over is what energy are you bringing to the situation. And to Kathy's point, it's not what you say to your kids. It's what energy are you expelling out into the kitchen or the bedroom or the dining room or whatever. So,
And the important part of coaching and counseling is so you can understand what that looks like. Because sometimes when we have been living a certain way our whole life, we can't even see what we're doing. And this is why we need like somebody to support us and point things out. Like if your children are saying to you, you're controlling me. And I'm sure a lot of parents have heard this, you know, quit trying to control me. They're trying to tell you something. And they're not trying to say you're a bad mom or you're doing things wrong. They're feeling as if you want them to be different. And that you are trying to make them be a certain way, which if we were to be honest with ourselves about parenting, a lot of times we're trying to do that, right? Like we got to be honest about what, you know, sometimes we are manipulating a situation for our own, you know, we'll be like, let's say this and let's do this so they do this. Like a lot of times as parents, we are, you know, I'm going to pull out this game so it I can feel us all getting along. But if there's, if the kids aren't getting along, then we're creating a scenario that's not real. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to say, just like Todd started with, I have so much empathy and respect and understanding for this, meaning that I experienced this too. Like, this isn't like, oh, you're doing it wrong. This is, yeah. Like, I, you know, when this comes up, because it always does, like if it shows up, you know, as I always say, in different pants, like I think I figured something out. And then I'm like, I got this. And then it'll show up in a different scenario and I have to work through it again. And what I have to work through again is my own perceptions, my ability to focus on what I'm doing rather than, I'll use their words, controlling other people, and having someone that I can be fully honest with, if it be Todd or my therapist or a really good friend, because you have to be able to speak truth about what's going on, even if it's just, you know, I kind of feel like when I have a, you know, it's just like a dump of like, here's all my feelings. And then when I can clear that away, then I can see a different way.
Mm-hmm. And I'm guessing that this teammate feels overwhelmed mm-hmm. and she probably feels alone.
Yes.
And she's not.
No.
There's so many people out there, you know, myself included, depending on the day, where I feel overwhelmed. Now, it seems like she's had a string of tough.
Right. It's been a tough summer.
It's been a tough mm-hmm. go of it. So I just want to say that, you know, we're here supporting you and that you can do this, mm-hmm. right?
Well, you can do it because it's here, meaning that when something shows up, we may be like, this shouldn't be showing up or I shouldn't feel this overwhelmed, but you are. So it pushes you to a different place. See, if we can always have this like undercurrent of difficulty or like this feeling of, yeah, there's stuff going on below here, but I don't really have to worry about it, then we don't change anything. Sometimes things have to get more difficult to create change.
I don't know if this helps. And then we'll go to Matt because Matt has a question. But I've had a few buddies of mine who are in the men's group, and they've been struggling with some pretty significant issues. One had a daughter who he found out was stealing. She's a college student. He was stealing from her, or she was stealing from him. And I, through coaching and helping him, we had good long discussions. But then there's this other friend of mine who is dealing with some really serious issues with the health of his daughter, with the mental and emotional health of his daughter. And what I said to my one buddy whose daughter was stealing from him, because that really was the essence of what was going on, I'm like, dude, all I can, after I blessed him and honored him and connected with him, I said, all I got to tell you is I know I just got off the phone with somebody. And he would trade places with you in a second if this was his biggest problem, because this man's daughter is going through some really significant psychological needs where she needs to get hospitalized and all that. And there's some suicidal ideation and all that. I say that story to you because there's always somebody who would switch places with you in a second. And I don't say that to make you feel bad, because right now you're probably feeling like you're in, there's nothing
it's
you
low,
can do.
Right.
It's
you feel low, low,
but it's mm-hmm. true. Like, there are a lot worse things out there. And, you know, it's funny, you know, your daughters are driving you nuts right now, probably because they're fighting or whatever. It reminds me of Rob Bell, you know, the very thing that drives you nuts about your kids, you're going to end up missing someday.
Right.
Because they might end up being really, really calm. And, you know, there's no like fire in them. They're at this young age where there's some fire. So.
Well, and that's kind of why I said that the good news is you don't really have to do anything about them.
Yeah.
If, you know, you can really just focus on how are you perceiving this, and, you know, just, you know, and I get questions very similar to this all the time. Like, I want the home to feel different. I want the vibe to be different. I want us to get along differently. But see, you can't do anything about them.
Yeah.
You can only do you. And that may mean you need to shift up your day, and you need to exert some energy toward counseling, and you need to get up earlier before they're awake so you can have time alone. You need to go to bed before everybody. Like, we're like, yeah, I know I need to change things, but I still want to do everything exactly the same. And those are, you can't, there's something's got to change, and it's painful. Change hurts. But change is inevitable in every stage. I have so many friends right now who are like dropping their kids off at college. So many people, Todd and I are in that phase now. It's funny, because I remember when we first started the podcast, like, you know, dropping kids off at college just seemed like, you know, forever ago, or like we'd never
arrive at that place. And now here we are, we have a junior in high school.
I just signed up my daughter for the ACT yesterday.
How was that experience?
Oh my God, it took like 45 minutes. I'm like, what? They're like, what are her grades? What does she want to do? Where's she going to go to school? I'm like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Like, she's a junior. She has no idea. Isn't that the point?
Yeah.
Isn't that where we're supposed to be?
As long as we're on rants, I've been booking the economy fares on airlines lately.
You economy?
They do call me Thrifty McSaves a lot. And they have this new policy where if you get economy fare, you can't carry on a small piece of luggage. And I just want to say that I'm frustrated and I don't like the airlines anymore.
Mm.
That's the end of my story.
Why don't you not do economy anymore and do...
Well, it's just fine. Now I know, but it seemed like I always used to get economy before, and they didn't. So they charge you basically $30. First of all, you can't get like your small roller bag on with economy fare, whereas before you could.
Okay.
It's like a new invention.
Okay.
And it's frustrating me. So if anybody knows why they did that or when they're going to stop, please let me know.
I'm sure they all know.
So I'm going to go over to Matt, but before I do, Matt has a non-parenting question. I just want to say to everybody on the team, if they're, you know, we are open to support you in any way. It doesn't have to be about parenting.
No.
Like, a few years ago, I did a little mini course called Zen Finance, where I just talked about money. So it doesn't have to be about emotional needs of your kids, which is what obviously Kathy and I talk about more often than not. It could be about anything. So
it could be about a movie that you like.
Yes. Right.
I don't care.
All right. So here we go. Matt, what do you have for us, my friend?
Well, first, since we're military, we get free baggage on flights. So it's no big deal.
You deserve it, man.
Yeah, I was going to say, I can't get mad about that.
That's right.
So I'm not quite sure how to word this question, because I just kind of formulated it in my head in the last 5 minutes, because no other questions were coming up, so I just kind of thought of one. So we were listening to that gaslighting podcast this morning in the car, and the connection's really bad right now. I don't know if anyone can hear me.
Yeah.
We can hear you fine.
Okay, I'll keep going. Okay, I'll assume everyone can hear me and keep going. So it got me thinking about, you mentioned the whole political climate in the U.S. right now, and it got me thinking about the Democratic primaries and how when people are running for office, all of their background gets looked into and everything that they may have done. And I guess my question is, at least for your, I'm looking for your opinion on, is it okay to judge someone from using today's standards for something they may have done 40 years ago, 30 years ago?
Such a good question.
A good example that came to my mind was I can't remember her name, and her name escapes me now, but they used to play her version of God Bless America during Philadelphia Flyers games, and they stopped doing that for some stuff that she did, music she recorded in the 1930s, I think, so a very long time ago. And because, well, I mean, she got judged for that, and because they were inappropriate songs, but very few people at the time have the fortitude to stand up to the rest of society when things aren't necessarily right. So is it okay to judge people like that or politicians using our standards now in 2019 for stuff they may have done in the 1970s for the politicians I'm thinking of, or for her, you know, in the 1930s?
Yeah.
So that's kind of my question.
That's wonderful. Question. And I actually have a take on this, if you can believe it. Kevin Hart was supposed to host the Academy Awards, right? And he didn't because he, I think, had some homophobic
tweets,
slurs, whatever. And Kevin did what I thought was a good job of owning it and then
saying he felt differently now.
And it made me think of that when you asked your question, Matt, which is, I think there's a balance and there's a pendulum and it's not black or white, but if I'm going to make a mistake, I'm going to make it on the side of I'm judging people based upon the culture as it is in this moment. So there's stand-up comedians who make a living about making fun of everybody and themselves and their experiences. And now that we are in a much more politically correct culture, I don't know if that's the right term or not, but things that were funny 10 years ago are not funny now. Like we just did Dead Poets Society, how certain things don't age well. Dead Poets Society, one of my favorite movies of all time. And there's a scene in it where Chris and who's Noah Wiley?
You talking about Will Gardner?
Will Gardner, but what's his name in real life?
Knox Overstreet?
No, what's his name in
real life? Josh Charles.
Josh Charles's character. This girl's passed out. And on the couch, and it's the girl that he's infatuated with.
Chris.
Her name is Chris. And he starts like rubbing her head when she's passed out.
Which isn't horrible.
Right.
I think it's more the leading up. He's like stalking her.
Yeah.
Like she's like, leave me alone. He's like, no. And she's like, go away. He's like, no.
So when I watched that movie back in 1989, and every time I rewatched it, I didn't think a thing about it. Now I see that scene, I'm like, ooh, that's a little not so good. So I think my answer is, Matt, as our culture shifts, I think the way I'm going to choose to deal with it, I'm going to adjust my expectations of what people say. Because I think you go back in time and look at stuff I said, and I would be hypercritical of it. So I don't know. My short answer is the second one, which is judge people as of now versus what they did 10, 20. Now, if I would have been upset with them 20 years ago, then I feel like I would have the right to say, hey, dude, that wasn't right. But if I'm saying it now because I've had different awarenesses, it's too late for me to have that judgment. That's my two cents.
I think this is a really messy question. It's an excellent question. I think it's the question of our time, actually. So congratulations, Matt. It's a question of our time. And why it's such an important question is because we're figuring it out on the fly. There's not going to be a simple answer to this. This is, I'll give you an example of something that Todd and I were talking about. So when the Me Too thing happened, we saw, Kate wrote about Aziz Ansari address this, and we saw his stand-up about it too. And yeah, I thought he did a pretty good job. At the height of the Me Too thing, Matt Damon decided to make a comment about how he thinks that we need to, as a society, differentiate between rape and someone maybe being suggestive or inappropriate. And he said that when the flames were probably as high as they could be. And so he got swatted down really fast, and people were like, basically shut up and, you know, quit telling us what we need to feel and what we need, how we need to look at this. And so there's a lot of people who are mad at Matt Damon. There was a lot of people who are mad at people who are mad at Matt Damon. And I really saw both sides of it. Because when you have been talking, because a lot of the things that people have said in the past are oppressive or harmful, racist, sexist, misogynist, homophobic, things that have been harmful to people. And even if they were acceptable back then, it still carries that feeling of this was harmful, even if we did this and this was okay. And so the people who got mad at Matt Damon were saying, please let us take the lead on this. You've had the voice this whole time as a white straight man. Please let us be the people who say, this is what comes next. This happened with the Women's March too, right? You know, the women who initially were leading were a bunch of white women, and the women who have been leading us all along have been women of color. And they're like, wait a second, let us take the lead. The reason why I'm bringing up all these other things, Matt, is because there's no way for there to be a simple answer, because it depends on the moment in time. And if things are really heightened and messy, because I think if Matt Damon were to say the same thing right now, he might get a little backlash, but not even close to the backlash he got before. And I think that because things have, it's not because we're not taking it seriously. It's because it's not, the flames are a little more like, okay, it's not such an out of control fire. It's like, okay, we're figuring this out. I think in the political climate right now, everybody is going to suffer. I think we're going to, because we've got a cancel culture right now. You guys know what a cancel culture means.
What's a cancel culture, sweetie?
Cancel culture is where we find something about somebody or we focus on something they said or did, even if it wasn't to be cruel, and we decide to take them out. I mean, in the
hurt their career.
Hurt their career. Yeah. It's in the millennials call it cancel culture, and so do Gen Z. And I guess we do too, even as Gen X. That's what's going on right now. Why is that happening? Not because we're all horrible people. It's because we're all realizing how inappropriate we've been in the past. You know what I mean? Like, we're all realizing how we've been offensive in the past. And now there's people who have been oppressed for a long time saying, look at this, look at this. Now, do I think it's all good? No, I don't. I think cancel culture is like harmful because we end up canceling ourselves. You know what I mean?
Squashes conversation.
Yeah. We're not getting anything done.
Right.
So going back to the political version of this, should someone be like disqualified because they did something in the past? No, this is where it gets into being a very articulate politician and being an empathetic, compassionate, and conscious person. Like Aziz in his stand-up, can you own it? Can you say you learned something from it? Honestly learned something from it. Not a very script, you know, not a written something that a speechwriter wrote for me that I'm supposed to say. Can you really speak to it in why you don't believe that anymore and where you were when you said it? Not a lot of people are very skilled in that area. And it's unfortunate that it comes down to being able to speak it appropriately. But, you know, like, I look, you know, at the Democratic debates, like with Biden, you know, there's been things brought up with him about his past. And I feel like there's so many different things he could have said. And I like Joe Biden. And I think he's always been on the right side of history. That the Anita Hill thing's a little iffy. But my point is that you have to be able to articulate your point and be conscious and aware, or else you have the potential to be canceled. And it may be at our detriment, meaning we may lose politicians that are actually really good and honorable, but that's where we are. Mm-hmm. It's messy. But if we can understand why it's messy rather than saying it's good or bad, rather than have a thing that we believe where it's like, this is how it should be at all times. We're very black and white thinkers. We have a very hard time. We like to know this is the direction we're going in. And the moment we're in our country is everything's in flux. And we have to be comfortable with the uncomfortable. And you know, I feel like, Matt, even though your question is unique, I feel like I talk about this a lot with people because people want to know, well, then how do I talk to women? Well, then what do I do on a date? Or how does someone run for office if this is the culture we're in? And I don't know.
Let's go to Matt to see if he has any thoughts. Matt, that was a lot of banter. Yeah. What do you think?
Yeah, it's good comments. And then I think it ties into to what we're going to through in our military right now, where we're trying to get rid of the sexually inappropriate behavior that's been going on in Canada anyway. I can speak to that. And one of my jobs a few years ago, when it first started, they call it Operation Honor here. Mm. I had to go throughout the unit and give briefings to people on, you know, what the new expectations are and what's appropriate and what's inappropriate. And one of the biggest concerns people had was that suddenly now women are going to come out with all this rash of false accusations that were going to happen. And I'm like, what gives you that idea that this is suddenly going to happen? I don't understand where that is coming from. That if no one was doing it before, why now with this sudden, why is this a sudden fear? It just made no sense to me. And having these debates with people, and that was in their mind a rational fear that suddenly there's going to be this influx of false accusations, which has never materialized.
Right.
It's just so bizarre to me.
Yeah, it's funny. So I'm lucky enough to talk to groups of men and young men about consent and sexual assault and harassment and all that. And there's always a few guys that talk about the few examples, like University of Virginia. Is that what it was? University of Virginia.
There was University of Virginia. That was the Rolling Stone article.
Duke lacrosse. So, and those stories are about a woman who actually conjured up a story. And
or was under pressure to conjure up a story, okay, like in the Duke lacrosse situation.
Okay. So for whatever reason, she made it up,
mm-hmm.
But it happens so rarely. So whenever I hear a guy, it's always a guy that says that to me. I said, that's fine. We can spend a little bit of time talking about false accusations. Mm-hmm. As long as you agree that the amount of the percentage of times that this happens is somewhere between 2 and 10%?
Yeah, it's like it's 2 and 8% or something like that. No different than any other crime.
Any other crime. And so what I say is, as long as we could spend 2 to 10% of our time talking about this and the other 90% of when this actually happens.
Mm-hmm.
Because what they want to do is they want to like take over the conversation and talk about these exceptions instead of the rule. And the rule is this happens way too often. And the only way for us to get through this is to bring in awareness to everybody, especially boys, but to everybody about what consent means, what's the difference between sexual assault, sexual harassment, things like that. So,
and I would say one more thing about that is that, and I lost my thought because I started thinking about Aziz. Well, let me say this, but it'll come back to me. I would say that if you guys get a chance, because we're on Netflix, Aziz Ansari has his comedy special. You don't have to watch the whole thing. Watch the first 10 minutes. He addresses some issues in a really honest and vulnerable way. And he also shares his frustration with it. It's a very like whole way to look at it. And this is what I was going to say. I remembered. My daughter and I were sitting outside because she has a government class that she's taking, and she really likes her teacher because her teacher is forcing them to look at, like last night, part of her homework was she had to read an article on CNN, read the same article on Fox News, and then read the same article on BBC, meaning the same topic. And she had to recognize the difference in how it's being portrayed. And, you know, she and I were having like a conversation about it. And she's like, it's just so interesting because some of the perspective feels so afraid. And so like, it was about it was unfortunately the Fox News one. It was about, you know, people are trying to take our history away from us. It was, I don't know if you guys have read the thing in the New York Times about 1619, and it's about racism. And there's a lot of people who are conservative who are like, they're trying to change history and make us look at our history different. And what I told her is a quote that we use all the time on the show, which is when you have
a great amount of privilege and you've had privilege your whole life. Any type of equality feels like oppression. And so when, Matt, you go to your, you know, to the people in the military and you say, we're going to do something different and we're going to give other people a voice about this and we're going to start changing things, the people who are used to having privilege, it scares them.
And by privilege, it means you don't even have to look at it. Yeah. Now we're saying look at it.
And they're like, I don't want to look at this because they're going to twist it and it's going to get turned around. And it's not just military. It's anything. It's anybody who's like, you know, now we're going to do something different here to make sure everything's fair. The people who are used to it being their way and they've never had to consider it get pissed off. You mean now at work, I have to like think about the jokes I'm telling? Are you kidding me? They don't want to be questioned. And that's because they're used to privilege. And that is not, they're not bad for that. Like if they're not bad people. This is the gray we've got to live in is a lot of times if you go too fringy left, people are like, and they're horrible people and they're racist. No, they're not. They only know what they know. They've grown up this way and becoming aware of what other people are experiencing. Like the other thing JC brought up, I don't know if you heard her, but where people will say, I'm tired of talking about politics. I'm tired of talking about things that are going wrong. That in itself is a privileged response because people who are being oppressed are fighting for their lives. They can't say, I'm tired of talking about this. They're forced to talk about it. So when we're like, I'm just not going to talk about this anymore.
I could say with complete authenticity, I live a completely privileged life because there's sometimes when I want to tune into the national news just to see what's going on. But honestly, most of the days I'm like, you know what? It's going to depress me and I'm not going to look at it. And sometimes a week goes by where I don't have a freaking clue what's going on in this world. And that is a complete, that's evidence of my privilege because I can do that because nothing is different in my life. So anyways, all right, we're going to go over to Rose and then maybe Kim. Let's see what happens. Matt, thank you for that really
that
good
was
question,
good. Thank
by the
you,
way.
Matt.
Hi, Rose. Where are you calling from or where are you from?
From Milwaukee.
Oh, okay. You're just an hour and a half north
say,
of here.
You're right by us.
Go Brewers.
I like the Brewers.
Why do you like the Brewers?
Because Craig Council. Do you watch baseball?
Yes.
So you know Craig Council, right? Mm-hmm. His wife, Michelle, was one of my good friends in college. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So we like the Brewers for that reason. Yeah.
So go ahead.
Yes.
Mm-mm. Oh. Sorry, I interrupted.
My question is, I'm recognizing in myself that So I'm a yoga teacher and I get to talk, right? And I like to talk and I love teaching. And I'm one of those people where their friends have always come for counsel, if you will. And I'm learning how to listen more than I do talk in that regard. But I have a lot of trouble doing that when in a tough situation with my kid. To talk and use like half the words, if not a third of the words, if not like one word instead of 17, right? You know, and I would like some ideas about how to press my own pause button, like truly follow my own advice. What I can feel I need to make a shift and I'm not quite sure how to do that.
Mm-hmm. Great question.
That's a really good question.
Rose, before you go, how old are your kids or your kid?
I have a 7.5-year-old who has a number of special needs. So I'm really starting to recognize that in that respect, but he's a double exceptional kid. So he's crazy brilliant. Mm-hmm. And his tactic is to engage you in conversation. That's his tactic for diversion.
Yeah.
And control.
Yeah.
So, and it works for him. Adults engage in major conversations with them. Mm-hmm. So I need to use a lot less words, but I get tripped up.
Yeah.
So I have a few thoughts. First thing is, are you in the micro community for the differently wired kids?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
good.
I'm Sostra Yoga on...
Okay, got it.
We know Rose.
I know, it's just people use different names.
You're frozen.
Can you hear us right now? Can you hear us right now? Okay, good. So the first thing is you need to be aware.
Yeah, you're frozen, but I can hear you.
Okay, good. First thing is, the only way to change your behavior is to be aware of your behavior. So the first step is obviously self-awareness. So basically you need to catch yourself, which is hard to do because you're like me, like you're a talker, just like mm-hmm. I am. You have all this wisdom and intuition and lessons to bestow upon your kid. And it's hard to bite your tongue, right? So that's the behavior you're trying to cultivate. So the only way to do that is to have the awareness. So you even asking this question is a big part of this battle because you at least know that it is a challenge for you. So, so what you're trying to do is create a little bit of space between stimulus and reaction. And the way that I do that is try my best. There's a few things I do. I try to do some meditation in the morning because meditation is a practice where your brain conditions itself to have a little bit more awareness than it otherwise would. Like when we don't meditate or pray or do some self-care, we're like on autopilot and we just keep reacting. So that would be the one thing. And then do you find yourself, Rose, catching yourself but still following through with saying it, or whenever you catch yourself, you be more quiet?
No, I find myself pushing, like I recognize it, I know what's happening, and then I keep going.
Perfect. Okay, perfect. So that tells me that you're over half the battle is already done. You have the awareness, you have the realization in the moment, you just can't apply what you know to be best. So the only thing I have for you is take 3 breaths or change your body posture. Those are the two things I do. So if you're talking to your kid in the kitchen, you're sitting down and you're like, I'm about to say something that I don't want to say, take 1 or 2 or 3 conscious breaths and change your body posture. Because when you do that, it changes the chemistry in your body and it just kind of brings you into a slightly different place. So if you're standing, sit. If you're sitting, stand. If you're standing, walk. Like do anything different just to kind of remind yourself, I'm in a different place right now. So that's what I have.
Yeah. I agree with Chad. That's good. I also think that the message that I try and give myself that I write down a lot, this kind of goes back to the first question that someone had about, you know, when we're trying to kind of make sure the home is a certain way and we're trying to control the home. I think this can be mom or dad, but I find that moms do this a lot more where the reason we're talking a lot is because we want to like make things a certain way. And we want to make sure our kids were imparting all the information that we want to impart. And we want to like, they say something and we can see it so clearly what we want to say and what we want them to believe. And what I've been writing a lot lately for myself is that I know how I think, but I don't know how they think. And that has to be half of the story, is that just because I'm giving my advice doesn't mean it's the right advice, nor are they having the same experience I'm having. Your son is definitely not having, even if you're just sharing like really basic things like the sky is blue and the grass is green. Maybe he sees the grass is yellow and you see, you know what I mean? Yes. Like sometimes we think, but everybody believes this, but I'll give you an example. I mentioned this yesterday when we were interviewing Duffy. I was talking about how the other day Cameron came outside. It was on Sunday. It was yesterday. No, 2 days ago. And she sat down and she goes, I don't like Sundays. They make me uncomfortable, you know, like Sunday. And I go, yeah, the Sunday blues. I go, I totally know the Sunday blues. And I get them too. And I was going on and on, you know, kind of like you were saying, you know, I was telling her how I had them in college. I had them in high school. And she's like, no, it's different for me. And I wanted to keep going and explain that I totally get it. And I had a moment where I go, okay, tell me about what Sunday blues feel like to you. And she didn't even want to call them Sunday blues. She goes, well, what Sunday feels like to me. And then everything she said was completely different than what I was thinking. So it was just a reminder that sometimes we want to talk because we love and we want to help. And that's kind of been our modus operandi. But sometimes we're hurting people when we talk too much.
I have two other ideas for you, Rose. Does your son have the capacity, the capability to, if you say, listen, little guy, what's his name?
Arlo.
Arlo, A-R-L-O. That's a great name. Mm-hmm. Listen, Arlo, Mommy's really trying to be a better listener.
Yeah. Mommy talks too much.
And if you hear me, have you asked him that? Say, hey, will you mirror for me or reflect back to me? If I'm talking too much, will you help me remember?
I have not done that. I can only imagine what it would look like. But I will. He'll love it. I will get his attention that way.
Yeah.
We do, because of the emotional regulation piece of his life, we talk about, I mean, like, he'll see me go, okay, you know, I'm feeling pretty angry in my body. This is what it feels like. And we talk through it. I'm like, okay, so let's do it. I said, Arlo, what should I do? Mm-hmm. I think we should do a take five. You're the one who taught me that. Why are you asking me such a ridiculous question? Mm-hmm. He gets it. So that would work.
And then the other thing is just ask questions. Like, it's funny when I'm coaching a guy and they say something, I'm like, God, I don't really know what to say. Like, I don't have the perfect words of wisdom to share. I just ask a question and it seems to like get better after I do that. So I would say go into any situation with your son in a kind of like what Kathy says, in more of a curiosity, inquisitive mindset, and literally ask questions. And I don't know if he would share. Some kids like to share and tell long stories and some don't, and he might give you one word answers. But I would say if you're going to talk, when you're talking, ask questions instead of statements.
And Rose, I think that you're probably like me, and we talk because it makes us comfortable. And you're probably doing a lot of talking to make yourself more comfortable. And that you can even say that. Just say, I talk to make myself comfortable, and my practice is to talk less. And what happens when we talk less is that there's uncomfortable silences, and that it's enjoying that rather than thinking that's a problem. Because I'm a talker, I don't like those. And I feel like they're just opportunities for me to jump in. And I've had to really like allow them to just sit there. And the reason I say that we talk to be comfortable is just, you know, go easy on yourself. Cause it.
Go ahead. I was going to interrupt you.
Why are you doing this?
Because she's a two.
Oh,
and sorry to be an Enneagram person. I'm hoping that maybe we can talk about Enneagram next time, but Kathy is a feeler. So she cares, and the way that she connects is by caring and doing all that. So I don't know if you're a two or not, Rose, or not, or if you even know what that means, but that's just her hardwiring. So it's hard to break this pattern. Whereas me, I'm like, I don't have a lot to say. I just, you know, whatever.
Well, we talk it through to feel better. You're a two too?
Okay, there you go.
Twos unite.
So real quick, I'm just going to throw a quick plug for the Enneagram. So I'm taking this course next year, and the Enneagram is part of the course, and I wanted to familiarize myself with it. Kathy and I have talked about it a little bit over the last few years, but I've been listening to this podcast, and I'm almost done with this Enneagram book, and it's a vehicle of self-awareness. It's a vehicle for empathy towards others. It's basically personality types, but there's 9 different types. And no one is better than any other, but it just gives you a little bit more of an appreciation for when somebody's acting a lot differently than you would in a similar situation. So I'm thinking about maybe using the Enneagrams as kind of a platform to maybe do another Zen talk or two.
Why don't you just post it on the test on the Facebook page,
sure,
and in the email, and let people take the test and figure out what they are, mm-hmm, or at least what you might be. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you take the test and it's not right.
So yeah, that's what I'll do, is I'll put something up in the email. There'll be a hyperlink to one of the tests. There's a million free tests. And then also put in the Facebook page. And depending on how many people actually respond to it, will tell us whether or not we want to dedicate any time to it. Because I don't want to take up Zen Talk time with Enneagram stuff if people have questions, but if people are really interested in it. Like with my daughters, do you know what our kids are?
No, they've never taken the test. I have a guess, but right, I really don't know.
So anyways, it's just like, you know, it's like love languages and all these other tools in a toolbox. Enneagram is no more special than any of the other really good tools.
I think it's about as helpful as like the Myers-Briggs test. Like I'm an INFP. I don't know if you guys have done Myers-Briggs, but it's similar to that, where you just kind of can figure out, this is the way I relate to the world. This is how other people relate to the world. Nobody is right. Nobody is wrong. We just do it differently. And just that understanding alone takes away that component of why would someone do that? Or why wouldn't someone do that? I used to walk around being like, how could someone not respond to that? Or how could someone not help that person? And it's because that's not the way they're wired. That's not the way they function. And I'm sure people were looking at me going, why do you feel like you need to help everybody? Because you don't. And you know, this is, these are the challenges.
Okay.
And the blessings.
So we got 7 minutes left. We're gonna go over to our friend Kim, who had a question, and hopefully she's ready. It's trying to unmute. Hold on. Hold on. Why is it? There it is. Hi, Kim. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Good. Did you have a question for us?
Yeah, I just want to know, like, what do you guys do when your kids are going through, I call them disappointment relationships, like friends or boyfriends, and I know not to give advice, I know not to say anything, you know, either way, but I feel like I'm not doing anything. So what do you guys do other than just listen?
So what are your feelings when you're not doing anything, and you're, so I think your advice for yourself is not to problem solve. Let them be disappointed. Don't carry their disappointment for them. Allow them to process it. So, but when that happens, because when our kids get disappointed, it sucks. We get sad, right? So how do you, does it weigh you down at all? Are you fine? How does it, how do you react to it?
I'm fine, but I feel, you know, I mean, obviously I feel bad for them, but you know, I offer to make them tea, or what do you feel like I can do to help? Or you want me to listen? Do you want me to leave? But it just seems to be happening a lot. You know, this one and that one and this one. And I just, I don't know. I just needed something else to do other than just sit there.
That's a really good
question. Sorry.
Yeah, right? That's a really good question. I don't know if I have an answer.
I kind of do. First of all, I totally suck at this. Because I do feel it so much, and I just get so sad, and I cry, not in front of them, like, because
she waits for the both of us to be together.
Yeah, right? And I write about it, and I'll take it to therapy, and not because I'm trying to solve their problem. I'm well aware I can't solve their problem, but I really do. The natural place that I go to is that I feel like this is part of an, you know, and again, I'm using all these things to tag me, but because I am an empath, because I like sit and feel people, I not only feel my kids, but I feel like I can't sit in the feeling. I struggle with it is all I'm trying to say, Kim. But what I have found is helpful to me besides having my good cry and working through it and doing what I need to do is I try and use humor with them, not to make fun of the situation. I never make fun of it. But sometimes, like, if I can pull at something that maybe we can laugh at, like Skylar and I have songs that we've made up, or we'll sing something. We'll be like, that person doesn't like me, you know, like, we'll, like, try and be jokey about it, because I feel like laughter and humor widens our perspective, because when we're really thinking about something, like I'm hurt, we can become really insular and we're shut down. And what humor does is it relieves some of the pressure. And it can be a tricky balance, because if you've got a kid who's really hurting, they really don't want to laugh right now. But I try and find moments where
You got to use your intuition.
You really do.
Because, like, I totally agree with Kathy. This is really good advice, but it's also paradoxical advice, because you're not using the humor to get them to distract themselves from feeling the feelings. Mm-mm. You want to let them feel the feelings. Yeah. While at the same time, sometimes you need a life raft or a rope just to kind of pull you up. And sometimes humor is that thing that can kind of, sometimes you just need an excuse to quit being in a bad mood.
Well, and sometimes I say things like, you know, and I'm trying to think of a statement that doesn't sound like violent. Like, don't you just want to, like, not go to school with people anymore? You know, like, I say things that don't distract from what we're talking about, but are kind of absurd, you know, just to kind of be like, don't you wish that you could just, you know, jump on a horse in the middle of class and ride away, you know, like I say things.
Instead of advising them to, like, oh, tell that girl to F off.
Yeah.
Like you're right. Being almost like,
yeah, I'm being absurd.
You're being absurd. And the absurdity is what gives it levity.
Breaks the tension.
Yes.
And then if she's like, no, I don't feel like getting on a horse. I'm like, I know, but I do. Like, you know, like I try and be like, I just try and be, and I'm being real, because don't we want to do that? Like, don't sometimes, don't you wish you could just not go to class? Don't you wish you could?
And I feel like our work is, can we sit in presence of a sad child and just sit with them? Or maybe they don't want, like, that's, I feel like, our work. Our work is not to fix. Our work is to, because, you know, I think our hardwiring is, a kid's sad, our kid's sad, we love this kid, we got to make him happy because I can't deal with my own discomfort of their unhappiness. Instead, our work is to sit with them with presence while they're experiencing their feelings. And it's not an easy thing to do. And depending on the ages of your kids, they may not want to be next to you. So then they're in their bedroom by themselves having to go through all this, which sucks because you don't want anybody to have to go through any disappointment alone. But feel like, you know, our work is just to get comfortable with the uncomfortable feeling.
Well, and what does the uncomfortable feelings mean? Like, what I had to realize after, you know, what, my kid is 16, so I've been going through this for a lot of years, is that it will all be okay. I think sometimes I can get to like, oh my God, they're hurt, or their friends are making, you know, a boyfriend broke up with them, or a girlfriend doesn't like them, or a teacher doesn't like them. And I'm like, what will this mean? And when I really look at the big picture, it doesn't mean anything. They just have to be hurt. And I got this thing a week ago that I ordered for our piano just to help me with this kind of stuff, Kim. And it just says on it, I'll take a picture of it and put it on the Facebook page, but it just says, it's all going to be okay. And I got it for me. I didn't really get it for my kids, even though I hope they get something out of it, which means no matter what happens, all the disappointments we go through, the failed test, the friend that disappoints us, the love that doesn't last, we're still going to be okay. And I mean that fully, not like, I hope we're okay. We're always going to be okay. You know, like, eventually everything gets worked through. It's the best part of being 48. It's like, it's the best part of being 25, 30, 35. Once you've had a lot of experiences, you can be like, you know what, this does suck and this is painful. And it's going to be okay. And as long as I know that, then it's easier to sit with my kids when they're in pain, because I just know it's temporary. Even if it's a week, it's still temporary. So, you know, so Kim, I think your question is, you're doing fine with it. You're just wondering, should I do more? And it sounds like you're doing exactly what you should, just being present for it. You know, it's going to be all right. And saying, can I make you tea, is really loving. And I mean, that's a really nice thing to do. And, you know, do, what are you going
to
play?
I'm trying to play a song, but it's not coming up.
Oh, a song about sitting with people in pain?
Sort of. I just can't get it.
Oh, here it is.
Hold on. I got my speaker though. I'm all ready. Hold on. Oh, here boy. It comes. Here comes a bride.
About a thing. Every little thing is gonna be all right. And you don't worry about a thing. Cause every little thing is gonna be all right.
I think it's really hard to be in a bad mood hearing Bob Marley.
This is truth.
Wouldn't you agree with that?
I love Bob Marley.
I only like the Greatest Hits album. We've all seen that Greatest Hits album in jukebox when we were in college. But every single song on this,
you kind of feel like you need to like have a Corona or like a bar drink. Or
yeah,
a
Corona
drink
with a lime in it.
Yeah.
And the sand.
Yeah. Don't offer that to your children, but you can have one.
It might help.
All right.
Okay. So,
802.
So that is our Zen talk. Two things, announcements. 1440 happens in about 2 months. About 2 months. So I know some teammates are going to it. If you are going and you want to get matched up as far as accommodations, let us know or let Millie know. Post it on the Facebook page.
And if you want to get your own room and you don't want to get matched up, don't. Don't feel pressure. This is not like, oh, the team's got to be together. You come and have your own weekend.
And then I got about 13 guys signed up for my retreat in January. So if there's any husbands of team members out there or any team
or Matt,
I got 3 or 4 guys. Scott, Sean is actually going on the retreat. But anyways, it's in January. It's going to be off the hook. It's going to be a weekend of connecting with nature, connecting with a bunch of incredible men, disconnecting from our phone, and having some fun. So,
and then the conference announcement is in about 2 weeks. We'll tell you guys before we tell everybody else.
When are you going to tell them, sweetie? Because we might, it's 8:20. It's August 20th. And we may announce it before our next Zen Talk.
I'll tell them next Zen Talk.
I know, but we might announce it.
Then I'll put it on Facebook or I'll email them.
It's going to be off the hook. So a lot of you guys already have tickets, but anyways. That's it. Cheers, blessings, love, appreciation, gratitude, all that good stuff.
Bob Marley.
Listen to Bob Marley. When in doubt, for everybody's question tonight, Rose, Matt, Kim, just listen to Bob Marley and everything's fine.
I'll be all right.
Isn't that the deal?
It is.
All right, guys.
Love you.
Adios.
Love you. I love you.